This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week marks the 15th anniversary of the Sandinista Revolution that toppled the Somoza dictatorship in Nicaragua. My guest Jaconda Belli is from a family which was part of Nicaragua's aristocracy. But in 1970, she joined the Sandinista underground. In 1974, she went into exile. After the revolution, she returned to Nicaragua, worked in the Sandinista government's Ministry of Planning, and became spokesperson for the Sandinista electoral campaign. Belli now lives in Los Angeles with her second husband, an American journalist. She's a poet and novelist. Her novel, The Inhabited Woman, was just published in the States. It's about a middle-class Latin American woman who joins an underground movement to topple a dictator. As the novel begins, the main character doesn't believe her personality is suited to becoming a revolutionary. She thinks her personal rebellion against the status quo is one thing, but it's quite something else to get involved with extreme idealism and collective suicide. I asked Belli if she also believed she didn't have the personality of a revolutionary.
Well, my personal rebellion started by becoming involved in the Sandinista front. But I did feel scared very often. And the first time that I had to really officially commit myself, because I had been helping over, you know, a period of time, but there came a point where I had to make a more serious commitment. And I failed to go to the meeting. I had a meeting with somebody who was going to tell me what to do, and I didn't go to the meeting two times. I was so scared. And finally, the third time, you know, he called me and said, you know, you have to really, if you are serious about this, you have to come. Or, you know, if you're not, just tell me and we'll, you know, this will end right here. And I knew then that I had, you know, I couldn't put it off anymore, and that I had to make a decision. And it took a lot of, you know, courage on my part, because I was really very scared. But I felt very ashamed of myself, you know, for having been so undecided.
Tell us something about the family that you came from and the class that your family was part of.
My family is a mixed Italian and Nicaraguan. My great-grandfather came from Italy to work in the Panama Canal as a civil engineer. And one weekend, I think, he went to Nicaragua and met my great-grandmother. And that's how I came to be. And it's a family that has a lot of tradition in Nicaragua. It's considered very upper class, not necessarily very wealthy. You know, there are different branches, and I wasn't really a very wealthy person, or my parents weren't. But we had this name, you know, Belli. It's a very well-known name, and it's recognized as being one of the high society, families, etc. So growing up in that family meant that I had a lot of, you know, privileges, and I went to the best schools, I went to all the right parties, and I was a girl who was brought up to get married, to be a socialite. I was the queen of the country club, for example. And
the queen of the country club?
Right, you know, I don't know how to say it. It's not really queen in Spanish, it's novia, you know. They choose one girl who is a debutante in the year to be like the, you know, like the queen of the club. And it's quite an honor. And you get there is a ball given in your honor and all that. So I went through all of those rites, you know, I went through all of the presentation in society and all those balls and meeting all these boys, you know, that I was supposed to choose from, and they were supposed to choose me also.
When you were a young socialite, what was your impression of the dictatorship?
My first impression of the dictatorship was when I was very young. I must have been about 6 or 7. And I would go with my nanny to the store to buy candy. And there was a student that was killed very close to my house. And I remember seeing the blood on the door of his house where he had been shot by the National Guard. And I remember that image very well because it stuck to my mind. And I don't know when exactly my dislike or my disgust with the dictatorship started, but it was a chain of events, this person that I, you know, this student that I knew, that I saw his blood on the door. Then later on, we used to live next door to Violeta Chamorro's house, and I remember one night she coming and banging at the door of my house saying, you know, please, please help me. They have taken my husband prisoner. And that was when Somoza García, the first dictator, was killed, and Pedro Joaquín Chamorro was taken to jail. And so you see, all these things are memories that I have in my head, and that little by little, I guess, I decided, you know, this can't go on. I mean, year after year, things would deteriorate, and people would be killed more, with more in cold blood, and nobody would do anything. I mean, it was just this feeling of impotence.
You followed part of your family's wishes. You got married when you were 18. You had your first child when you were 19. How were you introduced to the Sandinista underground?
Well, I was working in an advertising agency, and I started writing poetry when I was in my 20s. And through the poets and the people that I met once I started writing poetry, I learned more about the Sandinista front, because at that point, the only thing I felt about the Sandinistas was a quiet admiration, but also a lot of fear. I wasn't sure that they were right about what they were doing, and although I admire them for their courage, through these people, these poets and artists that I met, I learned more about the Sandinistas. I learned what their objectives were. I learned that they were really presenting an alternative for the situation in Nicaragua. And I met some of them. I met Camilo Ortega, who was Daniel Ortega's brother, who was later killed in the insurrection in Nicaragua. And we became good friends, and he told me a lot about the Sandinistas. So that's how I learned more about the Sandinistas, and I wanted to help. So I started to get involved very slowly. It was a slow process.
So what was the first work you did for the Sandinistas?
Well, the first thing I did was to take Camilo Ortega around, you know, to meetings and things like that. It was very small things.
This was Daniel Ortega's brother?
Right. And for example, I remember the first conflict that I had was when they asked me to draw a map of the house of the father of a very good friend of mine who was the director of a bank in Managua. And they said, we want to know at what time does he leave his house, when does he come back, what is his house like inside. And I it was the father of my best friend. So I was really, you know, I had a hard time.
Well, I can really understand why you wouldn't want to betray your best friend's father. So what did you decide to do?
I didn't do it. I told him that I couldn't do it. And since I was just starting, I said, you know, they didn't mind it that much. And they weren't going to do anything anyway. I think they were just trying to prove how willing I was to do something, or maybe they were just trying to prove my feelings, you know, how loyal I was. I never knew exactly what they were trying to prove.
Well, tell us more about the place that you found for yourself within the Sandinistas.
Well, for me, you know, life changed completely once I joined the Frente Sandinista. When I got married and I was so young, I was, you know, 18, and I remember thinking, well, is this it? Is this what my life is going to be? And feeling empty, and feeling that I had much more to give than I was being allowed in my social milieu, and that I was condemned to manicures and pedicures and beauty salons and, you know, going to parties, and I didn't really like that. So I had this dream of doing something different, but I didn't exactly know what. So once I got involved with the Sandinistas, and I felt my life was useful, my life was going to be put to good use, I felt very powerful. As a woman, I felt very powerful, because also I was starting to write poetry I had discovered the how subversive poetry could be, because I wrote erotic poetry at the beginning, and I realized you know with the reaction that it caused in the Nicaraguan society, how subversive eroticism when being spoken by a woman could be. So all these things had given me a sense of power, and that completely changed the sense that I had of myself, of what I could do, of also, you know, we had been brought up in our country to believe that we were impotent at the face of the dictatorship, that there was nothing we could do. And to realize that, yes, we could do something, that we could change our lives, that we could transform our destiny, that we had the strength in our hands to change the future. And, you know, that we were a group of people that we all believed that we had this conviction that was very strong. That also gave me a sense of belonging to a group of people that were much more worthwhile than what I originally belonged to by birth, you see.
Could you give us a sketch of the types of activities that you did?
I would drive people around. I would translate documents. I would hide weapons. That was, you know, basically I would get people to give money for the Frente. We would hide correspondence that was going up to the mountains. We would sew it into different types of things, like a teddy bear, for example, or we had to look for ways to hide things, to send mail outside the country so that it would not be detected by the army. And later on, when I went into exile, I was part of the diplomatic political commission of the FSLN, and I was, you know, I, for example, had to smuggle all the weapons that were used in the October 77 attack in the border of Nicaragua. So I had I did all kinds of things. I did things that don't know exactly what they were, because I had to travel to places and bring a bag, and somebody would come in the airport and take it from me. So I am not sure what I was carrying. I think it was probably money.
I believe you never told your husband about the activities that you were doing. Why didn't you tell him? Did he not believe in the Sandinistas?
No, he didn't believe in anything, in any kind of political involvement. He was very apolitical, and he wouldn't have agreed, and he would have made my life more difficult.
You think he would have tried to prevent you from the actions you were taking?
Yeah, well, he tried to prevent me from going to the university. You know, at some point, mm-hmm. when I had just been married a few years, I said, I want to go back to the university. And he said, no, you are going to be calling people to do strikes and things like that, so you better don't go.
So you must have been living a double life.
Oh, absolutely. I did. You know, I would, for example, hide all this literature from the movement up in the ceiling in my bathroom. I had a hiding place, and I would go into the bathroom and lock myself up, and that's where I would read all the papers and all the things that I had to read.
So were you still going to the country club, and people still thinking that you were a part of that circle while you were actually busy during other parts of the day smuggling arms?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It gave me a sort of joy, you know. It was a funny kind of feeling.
My guest is Jacunda Belli. She was part of the Sandinista underground that overthrew the Somoza dictatorship 15 years ago in Nicaragua. Her novel, The Inhabited Woman, was just published in the U.S. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jacunda Belli. You fled Nicaragua in 1975. What made you realize that it was time for you to go?
Well, there had been a wave of repression, and the person I was working closest to was taken to jail. And so when he was taken prisoner, I realized that they were getting very close to me. And we had this rule that, you know, whenever somebody was taken prisoner, they knew that they had to remain silent for a week to give time for all of us to be able to find refuge and to, you know, to move around, because you were tortured in such a way that you knew that at some point you were going to have to say something. So we all knew that, and when he was taken prisoner, we knew we had a week to flee or to, you know, seek refuge or go clandestine or whatever. So in that week I left the country, and that was what we used to do.
Was everybody able to hold out for a week during the interrogations?
Well, that's what we assumed they would do. No, I guess not. Not everybody did, but, you know, in this case he did. Mm-hmm. And he was buried up to his chin for more than a week.
In what?
In the ground. They buried him, this person.
So what happened to him after the week?
Well, then they took him out and they tortured him some more. And, you know, and after they thought they had gotten all the information they were going to get out of you, they would just put you in jail and not torture you anymore. That's what they used to do.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive. He's a psychiatrist.
So you fled the country. Your husband didn't know that you were a Sandinista. Did you tell him before you fled?
Well, I had to tell him because I had two daughters and I had to leave them with him. And so it was December 20th I had to leave. And it was quite difficult, horrible actually, because it was Christmas was coming and I couldn't explain to my daughters why I had to go. And I couldn't explain to anybody practically why I had to go. And I had to use a very frivolous excuse and sound frivolous and horrible. You know, that I was really tired, that I had to go and get a little bit of fresh air, that I needed to distract myself, something like that. And that's how that I had this ticket that I had to use. I invented that I had been given a free ticket, and so that I was going to and spend Christmas in Mexico, but I had to tell my husband, what was going on, and my father and my mother, the three of them knew what was going on. Really,
was your family shocked?
Oh, they were very shocked. Yeah, they were very angry at me. They thought I was very irresponsible and that I was risking my life in vain.
Well, you were risking their lives too, in a way, I guess.
No, not really, because that was not the way the dictatorship operated. They didn't harm your family, especially my family, you know, being a sort of very well-known and high-up family. They were not going to touch it. So I knew that, and I knew my husband or my children were not in danger.
So how long did you live in exile?
3 years.
And you returned after the Sandinistas won?
Yeah, I returned the same day, the 19th of July, to Nicaragua.
What were your impressions of the Sandinistas after they took control over the government? Do you think that they did a good job in running the new Nicaragua?
Well, I think it was a very hard situation because the intentions were very good. I think we all started out with very good intentions and overjoyed by, you know, having conquered at last our, you know, our self-determination, etc. But with the, you know, with the intervention of the United States and this Contra war, etc., things became more and more difficult. There were also a lot of mistakes that the Sandinistas made, I think. Their rhetoric was too loud and unnecessary. I think machismo played an important part in the demise of the Sandinista revolution. I think it was machismo on the part of the United States and machismo on the part of the Nicaraguan Sandinistas. But as a whole, I think it was a comedy of errors. I think everything started going wrong, and you know, when the war, the fact that there was a war led to less freedom, you know, the people who were more radical and wanted to be more lefty, more who wanted more something like more along the less democratic, let's say, had more room to operate because of the war. So it was But I think, you know, for Nicaragua, it was a very democratic exercise. And the truth is that it was the Sandinistas who gave way to this new, to the government of Violeta Chamorro. I mean, by turning the power over to Chamorro once the elections were held in 1990, which is the first time in the history of Nicaragua that power has been turned over to the next elected president in a peaceful way. I think it was very important to get rid of Somoza. I think the Sandinista 10 years were very important to also to build a new Nicaragua.
Were you shocked when the Sandinistas succeeded in overturning the Somoza regime? Did you ever think that would happen?
Oh, I thought it was like a miracle. I was shocked. Yes, I didn't expect it would happen so quickly. So the way it did.
And what about your parents? What did they think? They thought you were crazy and risking your life to join this revolutionary group, and then the group wins.
Yeah, no, they were very happy when the victory, you know, they were all, everybody was overjoyed in Nicaragua because everybody hated Somoza.
Your parents hated Somoza?
Yes, they did. My parents were, you know, from the conservative party. There were two parties in Nicaragua, the liberal and the conservative, and the liberal was the Somocista party and the conservative was the opposition. And my parents were very much against Somoza. And so everybody was overjoyed, and I was a heroine, you know. Once things changed, I was a heroine.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay, you're welcome.
Gioconda Belli's novel, The Inhabited Woman, was just published in the United States. I'm Jerry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.